And it is an absolute travesty in terms of scientific method. I mean, you can't even begin to imagine how awful it is from a scientific point of view. These guys would be flunked if this were submitted for, say, a doctoral dissertation. They wouldn't merely not pass; they would be laughed out of the room. It's just absolutely absurd. And so there needs to be a complete house cleaning at NIST. And I begin the book by reporting on this whistleblower who used to work for NIST and has written that it has become totally politicized, so that the scientists there are little more than hired guns. They can't put out anything without the approval of not only the head office at the Commerce Department, but also people in the White House. Now, this was the case, of course, under the Bush administration. My hope is that the Obama administration will understand what has happened there and do something. But in any case, given what you were saying about explosives and nanothermite, this document, the report on World Trade Center 7, argues against there being explosives there on two means. First of all, they refused to look at any of the evidence. They said, look, this hypothesis that explosives were used, we just decided at the beginning this wasn't credible. And so, no, we didn't look for any of that evidence, you know, for the signature of thermate or super thermate and so on. And we didn't interview the people who claimed that explosions were going off because, again, we knew that that hypothesis wasn't credible. And then they give their argument. They say, well, there couldn't have been a blast event because it would have taken so much explosive material. Many, many, you know, pounds of it would have been hauled in there and somebody would have seen them. And then it would have caused such a huge noise. And nobody reported such a huge noise. Well, the fact is that nanothermite would not make such a huge noise. And it doesn't take these huge quantities because it's so powerful. And they write the report as if none of them have ever heard of nanotechnology, and so that they wouldn't know about nanothermite or nanothermite. And as you say, Kevin Ryan exposed the fact that many, many of the people at NIST, some of whom are involved in this project, know perfectly well and have been involved in frontline research dealing with nanotechnology. So on this issue, as on all other issues, they simply lie. It's just beyond belief.
That's right. You know, I first started looking into this really seriously after hearing that you were at work on the new Pearl Harbor. It's been one surprise after another at how audacious these people are in their lies, how obvious it is, how they're hardly even bothering to clean up after themselves. It makes you wonder, you know, what could possibly produce this kind of attitude in people at these levels of power?
Yeah, an example of that has to do with this final report. They put out a draft report for public comment this last August of 2008, and said, you know, please comment on this, and we'll read your comments, and then we'll revise before we put out the final draft. So they did, and for the most part, they simply ignored the information that was given to them. There's one case where they did revise it because this fellow David Chandler had shown that what they said about the building not coming down at free fall speed, even part of the time, was absolutely false, and he got this on YouTube, and it's so convincing, they had to deal with that. But for the most part, they simply ignored all this. So, for example, Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers sent in a report which had been worked on by one of his members, Chris Sarnes, showing that what they said about the what are called shear studs not connecting the girders, their whole theory rests upon this girder that broke loose and then knocked a column loose, and then that started a cascade of failings and led to total collapse of the building.
It's the magic girder theory.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous theory, but nevertheless, that's their theory. And this hinges on the notion that these girders were not attached with these studs. And they make a big point of that and indicate that the whole thing probably wouldn't have fallen down if this girder had just been attached with studs. Well, this Chris Sarnes went back and looked at the interim report that NIST had put out on World Trade Center 7 back in 2004. And in there, it very clearly says the girders and the beams were attached with studs. And in this in this new version, they simply revised that sentence to read, the beams were attached with studs, but the girders weren't.
You know, language could be changed a lot easier than physical reality can be. So, you know, let's just change language and build a new world.
Yeah. So here's a case where it was pointed out in black and white to them that that what they're saying in their latest document contradicts what they said back in 2004. And they didn't change a word. Didn't change a word.
The unmitigated audacity.
Yeah. And this same document sent in by Richard Gage had another bit of evidence by that Chris Sarnes had found showing that their simulated fire, which everything is based on, this computer simulation where they can just put in whatever they want to, completely contradicts what they say about the floor 12 fires. And the floor 12 fires turn out to be the crucial ones. They're the ones that brought the building down, they said. And they picture in their simulations this roaring, raging inferno running from 4 clear through 5 o'clock. Huge fires burning at 1,000 degrees Celsius, which is also ridiculous, but that's what they say. And their own photographs in the same document contradict that. And that same 2004 document talked about various floors and then said, floor 12 fire was burned out by 4:45. 4:45 in the afternoon, the fire had completely burned out, and yet you look at the graphics in their 2008 report, and it shows floor 12 with about half of the floor covered with fires approaching or exceeding 1,000 degrees centigrade.
And then also, I think the Democrats really need to think hard about playing political hardball now with the Bush administration and its war crimes and the Republican Party. You know, the economy is tanking, and the Democrats are in power. They're going to get blamed for this unless they can find a way to point out that it was, of course, the Republicans, Cheneyaks, you know, this horrid regime that we suffered through for 8 years that created these problems in the first place. And what better way to put a stake through Cheney's heart and maybe through the heart of the Republican Party itself than to reveal the truth about 9/11?
Well, the most hopeful sign with regard to 9/11 that has occurred is this movement to either insist that the Bush administration need to be prosecuted for their crimes, which people such as Jonathan Turley, who speaks a lot both on Keith Olbermann's show and Rachel Maddow's show, he insists that to protect the Constitution, we can't just have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, as Senator Patrick Leahy has suggested, but that we actually, if people have broken the law, they need to be prosecuted for that. There's certainly a powerful argument to be made for that. On the other hand, Leahy argues that the main thing is to get the truth out And I have a strong affinity with that argument, because with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, you're more likely to get the truth out and to get it out quickly. And the reason that's important is to get the policies changed that were based on these lies. And that prosecuting would be a less important matter. Obviously, it would be great to have them all prosecuted. But if we have to choose between the two, then one can make a strong case for saying it's more important to get the truth out and get it out quickly to get the policies changed, because we could save millions of lives by doing that. And Leahy says, you know, his bill would be that if people aren't forthcoming and don't reveal the whole truth about the crimes they committed, then they would be prosecuted. So it's kind of an in-between middle position that may appeal to a lot of people. But in either case, whichever way it goes, both of those movements are important. And we're now in position to say, you know, if you're going to prosecute crimes, you've got to prosecute their arguably biggest crime. Now, people can debate, you know, is that bigger than lying us into the war in Iraq? But it's bigger in the sense that it's the founding crime. It's the crime on which these other crimes were then based. It was the pretext. So in that sense, it's not the root of all evil, but it's a root of a lot of the evil of the Bush-Cheney years. And so it would be most important to get the truth out about it, and then if there are prosecutions, certainly people should be prosecuted for it. And I say, given the new the increased credibility of the movement, with literally hundreds of scientists and growing numbers of, what are we up to, 700 something? I didn't even mention the biggest of all the groups, the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, have now around 700 licensed architects and engineers who have signed the petition. And that's very important, because those are jobs that, you know, people can lose work by saying they don't accept the official story. And yet you've had 700 licensed architects, engineers, calling for a new investigation. And you add them to the intelligence officials and the military leaders, and now political leaders and religious leaders and firefighters and pilots and on and on and on. You've got a lot of scientific and professional opinion saying we absolutely have to have a new investigation, because the former story on which our foreign policy and much of our domestic policy was based the last 7 years is simply false.
David Ray Griffin, interviewed by Kevin Barrett on No Lies Radio. We'll conclude the program with Barrett's recent interview with architect Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
My guest today has stepped forward during the past couple of years. He was listening to a radio show a little bit like this one a couple of years ago, and David Ray Griffin was the guest. When David started talking about the evidence for controlled demolition of the World Trade Center, today's guest was flabbergasted. He had to stop and collect himself and think about the implications of this, and then he had to go and check it out for himself, and he found out that, sure enough, David appeared to be barking up the right tree. And he didn't just sit around and be morose about it. He went out and did something. My guest, as you probably have guessed, is Richard Gage, AIA. That stands for the American Institute of Architects. He's the founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, AE911truth.org. One of the most important professional groups, like the brand new professional group that just started, Medical Professionals for 9/11 Truth, is up today. But Architects and Engineers is going to be a hard one to beat in terms of importance because Richard has gathered hundreds, he'll tell us how many hundreds in a moment, of professional architects and engineers, including people like himself who have experience putting up steel-framed structures, who know that the official story of the free fall speed disappearance of these three steel-framed high-rises does not stand up to the light of scrutiny. So without further ado, let's bring him on. Richard Gage, AIA. How are you doing, Richard?
Very good, Kevin. It's very good to be here with you. Thank you.
Well, it's great to be back with you. You know, I really enjoyed spending some time with you last June when you were giving your presentation in Chicago. I got to introduce you, and I'm really impressed with your work. You know, you kind of came out of nowhere to become the really big force in getting this message out to the people who can then step forward with you and make a credible case that this needs to be reopened.
You honor me. Thank you. I don't know. I felt like I just stumbled into this. I literally had to pull my car over at the high school that I was meeting somebody else at, and was very late to that meeting as a result of being completely, as you say, flabbergasted. I had never heard any other explanation as to how these towers came down other than the official one. And it put a lot of things into place because I had no idea what I was looking at when I saw those towers came down. I was just in a state of shock, and I didn't know how to put it in a frame of reference. We've never seen anything. Well, first of all, we've never seen a structural steel building collapse. Second of all, we've never seen one explode the incredible way that one did. We were in a state of shock because our country was under attack, so we didn't know what to think other than what we were told by these hand-picked experts the morning of 9/11.
So when you really digested the implications of this, you really got going fast. A lot of us have figured this out, but not all of us have managed to put together a juggernaut for truth the way you did. So what's that been like?
Well, there's. I looked around after listening to this program and going to see David Ray Griffin that night. They were sold out. There were 600 people already in the theater. I had to go home and listen to the webcast. But I showed up at a meeting of the Northern California Alliance for 9/11 Truth the next Thursday, and I expected to see a room full of very angry people, and there were only a dozen people in the room, and one of them was an architect, and there was no other architect speaking that I could find at the time, or engineers, structural engineers, people who are trained to design the bones of buildings, people who could stand up and say, this couldn't have happened the way it did, and here's the evidence that suggests it happened a completely different way. So I looked around, I said, well, where are the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth? And since there was none, there was no other choice. I am not singularly qualified to found a nonprofit organization or to speak or to get the word out. But no one else was doing it. It was like the whole weight of the world was on my shoulders. I go, oh my God, I'm just an architect. Let me go back to designing buildings. I stole Stephen Jones's presentation, the slideshow, and I started adding to it and doing some research and just building it up. And I gave my first presentation at the firm I worked for. We had 14 architects there. They all came, and all of them agreed with me at the end of the hour in which I had to buy them pizza to get them to show up, because most of them thought I was nuts. At the end, they all agreed with me that all three buildings at the World Trade Center high-rise were brought down by explosive-controlled demolition. They were in shock. All but one signed our petition. The other one said he was Middle Eastern and he just wouldn't. He was in a state of fear already. So that launched us. It was very exciting. Today we have over 600 architects and engineers all demanding a new investigation. Almost every architect every engineer that sees this presentation agrees with us, and it's very exciting because the evidence is so compelling, it speaks for itself. The science-based forensic evidence found at the crime scene is overwhelming.
Well, I'm glad you stepped forward and started putting on those excellent presentations because, you know, I wasn't having luck with the architects and engineers I spoke to for some reason. You know, when I confronted these people or, you know, they ran into me when I was out doing teach-ins, they would say ridiculous things like, oh, the buildings just fell down the moment the planes hit them. Of course they did. The planes were so far, you know, or they would say that the inferno from the jet fuel melted all the steel instantly. And, you know, and I'm saying, wait, you said you're an engineer? You know, what's going on here? But somehow you managed to bring on board so many people. And, you know, how are we going to get more of these engineers and architects to come see your presentations? They all leave agreeing with you. We need more of them to see you. What are we going to do, buy 10,000 pizzas and invite the whole world group of architects? How are we going to get this message to more professionals?
Well, we have a large campaign to call every architect and engineer in the area where I am, so I can go in and buy them lunch and feed them the 9/11 truth. We have an effort to contact the architects and engineers in every community that I go to across the United States and now to Europe in 9 cities in November and in Canada. The local event coordinators contact them through mail and email and even personal visits to offices where they give DVDs, inviting them to the presentation, which is usually on Friday nights. We're booked for the next 4 months every other weekend. This is very exciting, and they do come. I mean, hundreds of architects are invited. Sometimes we'll have half a dozen or a dozen actually show up. At the end, we do a show of hands. Well, we do a show of hands at the beginning, how many people think these buildings were brought down according to the official story. The jet planes hit the buildings. There was an ensuing explosion, damage to the structure, an inferno with jet fuel, fire weakening the steel, and a consequent gravitational collapse down to the ground. So we'll have, I don't know, maybe 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 people believing the official story or unsure at the beginning of these presentations out of 100, 200, 300 people. And at the end, we'll have either zero hands go up saying the same thing, or one or two at the most. It is startling. So that's how we're going to get the architects, by having everyone, including every one of your listeners, contact every architect and engineer they know and send them the AE911truth.org link, because this has been shown to be one of the best ways to approach architects. We don't approach them by suggesting that 9/11 was an inside job or giving them lectures. We say, check this site out. 600 of your colleagues are asking for a new investigation. They cite all this evidence not given in the media that we're going to go through today.
I think the idea of doing the poll before and after is a really, really good one, and you've really taken this to the next level in terms of getting the qualified experts on board. Here's a question that was emailed in from Dave in D.C., and he wants to know, is there a single piece of evidence, just one solitary by itself piece of evidence, which, if accepted as legitimate, could prove controlled demolition, or are there more than one of them?
There are dozens of single pieces of evidence, smoking guns, all of them, that individually, any one of them would be almost overwhelming evidence in most of these cases that these buildings were brought down by explosive controlled demolition. Let's just begin by pointing out the most obvious one, which is the destruction of Building 7. Because most people don't even know about the third high-rise to collapse, if you will, into its own footprint almost. This one into its own footprint. The Twin Towers are very different. We'll get to that. But at free-fall speed, Building 7 collapses, in the first 2.25 seconds, it is free fall speed. This is acknowledged now by NIST. And then in 6.5 seconds, the building is completely down altogether, 6.5 seconds into its own footprint almost. Symmetrical, beautiful, classic controlled demolition is what it looks like. And this is why so many people across America have hounded NIST for the last 7 years to complete their investigation. And finally they do, and they come out and they tell us in August, oh yeah, we know what it's not. It's not a controlled demolition, because we would have heard a huge bang that would have rang for all through the lower Manhattan. Everybody would have heard it. You'd see flashes of light, right? You'd hear these explosions. It would be so obvious. Well, interestingly enough, what he doesn't tell us is that the chemical evidence of thermite and the other evidence of thermite in molten metal, molten iron in the case of thermite, was found by their predecessor, FEMA, in the bottom of the pile in abundance, the ends of the beams being partially evaporated. The molten iron has the chemical constituents of thermite, including oxygen in the ends of these beams in the molten metal, and aluminum and fluorine, and 1,3-diphenylpropane is found in all of the in the dust. And in fact, EPA finds it in levels that dwarf all others. And this is a molecule associated with a certain type of thermite called Sol-Gel thermites. It's not found in fires. They've never found it in any other at levels that dwarfed all others, they said. And they've never found it in any other sampling they've ever done, says Eric Schwartz. And this and yet it's found at these huge amounts of levels. So it's not from office fires, desks and computers and so forth. So this evidence, all the steel, by the way, by FEMA, was shipped away at 400 truckloads a day. And they save one or two pieces, the two pieces they have that they analyzed, they find intergranular melting, oxidation, sulfidation, hot sulfur attacks. Sulfur is a chemical added to thermite to lower the melting point of steel. It's a key ingredient of thermite, a special form of thermite. So all of this evidence was ejected summarily by NIST when they took over the investigation after FEMA concluded in May of 2002, citing that their best hypothesis for the destruction of this building, which is fire and then complete collapse, has only a low probability of occurrence. Their best hypothesis has a low probability of occurrence. Well, let's look for a new hypothesis, one that answers the questions of why there's melting of steel, pools of molten iron seen by the first responders, flowing like lava, and in the videos, flowing out of the South Tower, for instance, this molten iron. It's pretty interesting.
Indeed, you know, all of that molten iron, all the chemical evidence for thermite, and in that evaporated steel beam you mentioned that was even reported on in the New York Times as the greatest mystery of 9/11. You know, how could a steel beam evaporate from natural causes in a normal office fire? I mean, how could anyone make that kind of argument? Or, you know, what is the official explanation for that evaporated beam?
Yeah. Well, there is no official explanation, first of all. There's guesses that are taken after the fact in interviews, but that piece of steel doesn't even live in the NIST report. But let's look at fires, because they ejected it. They're just summarily ejecting this key evidence that was documented in FEMA's Appendix C. But fires burn about 12 to 1400 degrees at their hottest under ideal fuel-air mixtures, open air. And what we have in Building 7 is a few windows broken, 8 to 10 small pockets of fire. The videos and the photos show only that much fire and a lot of smoke on the south side. And the problem is that steel doesn't even begin to melt until 2700 degrees Fahrenheit. We're missing twice the amount of heat energy required to even begin to melt steel. And this wasn't even melted steel. This is molten iron, a very different product than structural steel. It doesn't have the alloys in it that steel does. Well, where did the molten iron come from? Well, we have to look at something that produces molten iron, the thermite, whose byproduct is molten iron. That's what it does. And not only that, when it's under explosive conditions, very high pressures, any liquid will atomize. And this molten iron is atomized to very small particles, smaller than a human hair, that are found in all of the dust throughout the World Trade Center complex and beyond, across the river. This powder, which is primarily pulverized concrete, which we'll get to when we talk about the Twin Towers, but all of this dust powder is full of these tiny iron-rich microspheres, most of them smaller than human hair and even microscopic, perfectly round spheres. They could only have been formed by an aluminothermic reaction under high intense pressure, because liquid under a pressure forms itself into a sphere by its surface tension, and then it cools and it just goes everywhere with this dust as it's moved. It has the chemical ingredients of ignited thermite in it. Again, aluminum, iron, manganese, sulfur, and this fluorine, a chemical found that is used as an oxidizer, and specific formulation from Sol-Gel type thermites. Manganese is the byproduct of potassium permanganate, an oxidizer used in thermite. This is very, very... I've just described already, to answer Dave's question, any one of these smoking guns are enough to put a lot of people away for a long time. Sometimes people say, well, who would do such a thing? Well, maybe we'll get to that in a little while. But I want to encourage everybody to not jump to conclusions. There are some obvious implications, certainly, because Al-Qaeda didn't have access to plant high-tech thermite. We haven't even gotten to how high-tech this stuff is, actually. But in these highly secure buildings, Building 7 being occupied by the CIA, the IRS, the Department of Defense, and many other three-letter agencies, along with the financial institutions in the building, one of the most highly secure buildings outside the Pentagon.
Indeed. So that certainly we're not talking about 19 guys operating out of a cave led by a guy on dialysis. We're talking about somebody a lot more sophisticated than that. My guest today is one of the leading activists in this very important field, Richard Gage, a member of the American Institute of Architects, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. That is AE911truth.org. But to follow up on Dave's question, Malik in Malaysia, who actually moved to Malaysia after he was hounded out of the country when he appeared on the radio shortly after 9/11 and said it looked like an inside job. Well, he's been in Malaysia ever since, and he's actually been doing good work in his own way. And anyway, Malik asks, he points out that we've made great strides in this movement to reopen 9/11. Still remains a grassroots movement. Therefore, starting conversations is really important. We need to come up with good conversation starters. So, Richard, what's the best possible conversation starter for a grassroots level interaction, to break the ice and get people thinking about this issue?
Well, one of the things we've found is that everybody you talk to knows everything there is to know about the World Trade Center Twin Towers and doesn't want to hear any more. Everybody's an expert, particularly architects and engineers who consider themselves experts in these subjects, who just parrot the official story that I highlighted earlier, which is fed to us by experts. So what we do is start with Building 7, and we ask questions. We don't tell people things. We don't launch into our lecture like I'm doing today. We say, did you know that there was a third high rise to collapse on 9/11? They will say no. Most people don't, because we haven't seen this 47-story building collapse other than on the day of and the evening of and maybe the day after 9/11. With very few exceptions on the mainstream media. So we don't know about it. It's hidden. It's the third worst structural failure in modern history, by the way. And most people don't know, and you can ask them this, did you know that fires have never brought down a steel frame structure, even though we've had over 100 examples of much hotter, much larger, and much longer lasting fires? Oh no, I didn't know that. Did you know that fire was the reason Building 7 came down? May I show it to you? And you pull out your iPod or your laptop, and you show them, which is what we're going to be doing this April to an audience of 24,000 architects who are coming to San Francisco.
Wow.
And most of them hopefully will come by what we hope to have is a booth there, which will end up costing us about $10,000 to put the whole thing together.
Does that include the pizza?
We would include cookies. They last longer than pizza in front of architects. So they'll last the 4 days of this convention, and they'll see, because we're going to open our laptops, and they're going, in fact, large LCD screens of Building 7 going down, and they're going to say, "That's a controlled demolition. Everybody does. We've seen it on TV. We have a frame of reference for this building." And so we say, "What's this building doing?" That's our third question. And they tell us that's a controlled demolition. Then you say, "Did you know this was the third high rise to collapse in Building 7 and fires are blamed for this?" "No, that can't be fires." Then we tell them, "Oh, NIST clearly acknowledged, after being forced by members of the truth community publicly, to acknowledge that this is falling at free fall speed for the first 2.25 seconds, they finally come back and they acknowledge that, "Oh, yeah, you're right. It was free fall speed." But they refuse to acknowledge the implications of that statement, even though having priorly acknowledged in their draft report that if the building had come down at free fall speed, that would mean there'd be no structure under it. Well, duh. So look at the series of videos on our YouTube channel. AE911 Truth is the YouTube channel by David Chandler, which exposes this a fraud on the part of NIST, first telling us it came down at 40% of freefall, then acknowledging it was freefall, then not acknowledging the implications of that, which require a patterned sequence of removal of core columns, at least, within a tenth of a second of each other in order to bring this building down symmetrically at free fall speed, synchronized floor by floor. Now, if any of that timing is off by more than a tenth of a second, a building this tall will begin to tip. And that's exactly what happens in controlled demolitions. A lot of times, it'll begin to tip. This was almost perfect. There's almost no tipping in this building. So NIST doesn't even acknowledge that these columns had to have been removed.
And it's so starkly obvious and in your face that, you know, one wonders whether these 24,000 people wandering past your booth are all going to, you know, faint and hit the floor, kind of like you did when you first heard this information. Next question here. This was emailed, actually, this wasn't emailed as a question
specifically for you, Richard, and I'm forgetting exactly who sent it in, but one of my many correspondents was saying that they think there should be a group of controlled demolition professionals for 9/11 Truth. And, of course, there are some people with some knowledge of that. But, of course, there are, you know, the number of people in the world who are qualified to work on demolishing high-rise buildings is very, very small. It's such a tight industry. Maybe it's hard to imagine those people sort of, you know, ratting each other out. I don't know. What do you think about talking to people who are, you know, in the demolition industry?
Well, we do have military explosives experts who have blown up buildings, who do who are on our petition and demanding a new investigation because of the overwhelming evidence for explosive demolition here.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you think about the industry professionals that bring down high rises, who are their clients? These are the richest people in the world. They're out of a job as soon as they start opening their mouth about this. So if they have opened their mouth, I'm sure they wouldn't be employed, and so they're between a rock and a hard place, really. Mark Loiseau is a controlled demolition expert. What has he said? He said that they were bringing up molten metal by the bucket loads in a letter that he has acknowledged writing, and this is direct evidence of something other than fires, because as we've discussed, fires don't melt steel.
And obviously Mark knows that. I mean, he has to know that.
Yes, and he's been trying to waffle out of that statement ever since, but he hasn't outright lied and said he didn't write it. So he's in a tough place. But yeah, that's the reason. We'd love to have more controlled demolition experts come clean, come to their conscience, and step forward, like we were asking other people who must know of this inside operation, to step forward and make your conscience clear, help the American people, because obviously the implications of any kind of an inside operation that would produce this destruction and the murder of 3,000 people would be representing some sort of horrible condition politically inside of elements within our government at the highest levels, and the Defense Department and the Intelligence Department to produce this. This is a really, really bad state of affairs for America. Our freedom is obviously under attack. If this many people got together and attacked ourselves in order to, presumably, in order to do what followed 9/11, the invasions and occupations of two countries in which already over a million people have perished. This is huge. It can't be underestimated, and it can't be washed under the carpet by the left or the right in this country. In favor of moving forward and pretending that somehow this never happened.
Well, we're hardly moving forward right now. Obama is moving pretty slowly on getting people out of Iraq. Here in Wisconsin, we just sent the biggest deployment since World War II of troops to Iraq. And plus, he's trying to massively escalate the war in Afghanistan against the wishes of not only all of the people of that region, but even the puppet governments themselves. So, you know, he may be closing Guantanamo, but he's continuing this process of disappearing people extra-legally with no habeas corpus, disappearing people and torturing them. He's just keeping it going other places than Guantanamo. So there's hardly any moving on that's really happened yet, and let's not even get into the economy. It seems to me that we need that shock effect of 9/11 Truth if we're going to genuinely change course away from this horrific movement towards the loss of freedom and towards perpetual war that we've seen during the Bush years.
Yeah, and it's going to take everybody talking to their friends. Those of us who say, "Oh yeah, I knew about 9/11, you know, 3 years ago," and they do, or at the day it happened, and or they just hear about this presentation, and they come and they see this evidence that we present, and
they do nothing. And I just don't understand that. I don't understand how people could understand even the implications of these buildings going down like this and not doing anything. It's everything changed for me the day I found out about this. I knew that my life was at a Y, and I was being directed very clearly, and I was angry, and I had a lot of energy, and there was nothing else that could be done other than to expose this to the American people, and I was hoping somebody else was doing it, but they weren't. The architects and engineers need to know in the Twin Towers what are the classic features and unusual features of explosive controlled demolition. If they don't know that, they can't wake up. We have got to tell them. It is incumbent upon us as citizens of the United States to act, to do something to save our country, because if they planned and executed one false flag attack like this, which turns out to be one in the chain of many, which I'm sure you've spoken about on your radio program before, they will, can, and will execute another one in order to maintain and consolidate this control. And I have no illusions that one administration is different from the next. These people are very, very highly controlled by those who are put them in these positions of power. And I'm sure that we can expect the next one. In fact, we've been warned by members of the previous Bush administration, current Congress, and the media that a far worse attack is imminent or planned. Or Chertoff even had the gall to suggest that he had a gut feeling as Homeland Security chief that attack was imminent last summer, without any evidence to suggest why. I mean, lots of, and Hannity and Combs, Sean Hannity put out this incredible fear tactic just the other day on expecting another false flag and how easy it is to have nuclear weapons in the hands of these terrorists. And I have
For some reason, they didn't invite me back to refute that.
Yeah, I haven't been invited on mainstream television either. But someday we will, because there's going to be millions of us talking about the specific points of explosive controlled demolition in the Twin Towers, such as the fact that they also fell, if you will. It's the wrong terminology. They were destroyed. But the building came down at virtually free fall speed. If you throw a brick off the building, you get 9.2, 9.5 seconds with air resistance, and the building comes down in 10 to 12 seconds, depending on how you measure it. This is almost free fall speed. In fact, it's 64% of free fall acceleration in the first few seconds, indicating that these columns had to have been removed ahead of this collapse. And in fact, in the North Tower, what we have is a 15-story section above the point of jet plane impacts. In the first couple of seconds, that 15 stories has reduced its volume, telescoping in on itself by half. And then in the next couple of seconds, it's completely gone. Before there's any downward movement of it, it has destroyed itself, hurled itself laterally after dismembering all of these columns and beams and pulverizing this concrete right away, even before the gravitational potential has developed. In other words, before anything could be crushing anything else, it has destroyed itself. And after that, what we have is there's no pile driver, in other words, which is the whole theory of NIST, that this top section drove the rest of the building down. And they acknowledge at essentially free fall speed, which is ludicrous.
Well, right.
The lightest portion of the building, and it's gone.
They can't explain how that pile driver could cause the rest of the building to disappear at nearly free fall speed. And they admit they didn't even try to explain that. All they tried to do is explain how that so-called pile driver of that top portion of the building could have been cut loose from the bottom and sent down. But as you say, there's no pile driver. It's all been blown to dust.
And after that, you have the building tearing itself apart at free fall speed. There's nothing driving it down. And these 4 and 20 ton perimeter wall sections are being hurled laterally up to 600 feet away. In order to do that, it takes the physics of it is that their exiting speed horizontally vector ejection is turns out to be about 50 to 70 miles per hour. They have to be shot out of the side of the Twin Towers to get that far away. That takes an incredible amount of energy, and most all of them were shot 300 to 600 feet away. It's extraordinary. This is yet another piece of evidence that singularly points to the explosive controlled demolition. But there's more. There's squibs or mistimed explosions down the face of the building, well beyond and below the canopy of destruction. These explosions occur at 200, almost 200 feet per second. These can only be expelled by explosive speeds. We have the videos. We can measure them. And NIST says these are puffs of air being produced by the pile driver pushing air down. Well, we talked about the pile driver not even being there anymore. But these are not puffs of air at all. They're pulverized building materials. And most of them occur geometrically precise points between the corners of the building. It's ludicrous to suggest that these are natural phenomena being produced by air, which in an open space, air would fill the space uniformly and blow out all the windows if it blew out any at all. It's not these highly focalized, pinpoint accurate, geometrically precise, violent ejections.
Right.
So
classic squib.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, absolutely not. It's odd that it's taken so long for the people with the background knowledge like you have to take a look at this and figure it out. But I'm sure glad you have, and I'm glad it's been picking up steam with all of these other professional organizations. Here's a question from William in Key West. He asks, have you ever seen the actual working blueprints of the construction of the World Trade Center towers? And he says that Giuliani's keeping them hidden. And why would he be doing that?
Well, actually, he was certainly trying to for a long time. They leaked out in a series of two CDs that were released, and now people can see those blueprints, both the architectural drawings and the electrical drawings. We'd still like to see the actual structural drawings, but on our website, AE911Truth, they can be seen. And on Jim Hoffman's excellent website, WTC7.net, excuse me. And what's interesting about them is we do note that there are these evidence in the drawings of these core columns, 47 of them, up to 52 inches by 22 inches, almost solid steel on the long side of the core, and continuously welded all the way to the top. This is a structure within a structure. The Trade Center is a tube structure. And spanning between these two structures is the more vulnerable trusses, which are blamed for their sagging and then pulling in the outer columns, perimeter columns, and causing the failure by column failure theory is what NIST calls it. Well, there's a huge amount of the problems associated with that theory are innumerous. Because essentially what you'd still have, you'd be looking at the bottom of the pile for some floors. I mean, after all, there was 110 floors, and each of them were an acre in size. And there's none found at the bottom. I mean, this is a gravitational collapse. We expect to find some floors at the bottom. But all you see is a pile of debris about 2-3 stories full of aluminum cladding and structural steel. The floors are missing. 90,000 tons of concrete were in those floors. It's been completely pulverized to a fine powder, smaller than a human hair, most of this powder. This is an incredibly destructive force that pulverized not only everything inside the building, including tens of thousands of file cabinets, but people as well. We have only 300 whole bodies found. 20,000 pieces of bodies were found, 6,000 small enough to fit into a test tube. And there's bone fragments found across the street on top of the Deutsche Bank building that are only a half inch long, 700 of these bone fragments. How did they get so small, and how did they get over there? This is astonishing evidence. In fact, there's 1,147 people that didn't even have any trace small enough to fit into a test tube. It completely vaporized these people.
How do you get vaporized in a gravitational collapse?
They should have been trapped between floors. We should have found 110 floors, maybe 100, maybe 50, if there was severe breakage with people trapped between them and file cabinets and desks and chairs. But all we have is basically this powder and structural steel. Everything's been pulverized in midair, and we see these violent explosions at underneath the canopy racing down floor by floor, just like the first responders talked about. Over 118 of them reporting explosions at the beginning of the collapse of each of the South Tower and the North Tower. And these are recorded by their chief, Thomas von Essen, who wanted to preserve the memory of that day. 500 people recorded, 118 of them talk about flashes of light and sounds of explosions at the beginning of these so-called collapses. It makes no sense whatsoever.
And given that evidence and all of the other evidence that we've been talking about and all of the other evidence that we haven't had time to get to, here's I guess, the last question. We only have a couple of minutes left. This one is from Anthony in Thailand. He says, what does the team think could be done to take the movement to the next level? In other words, what's our best strategy for taking this information and changing the world for the better with it?
We have to penetrate the halls of Congress and find some congressional people who are willing to risk their careers and talk about this. Dennis Kucinich is an obvious truth teller who needs to hear a lot more from the 9/11 truthers, but many others. Everybody should be going to their own congressional office and bringing the DVD 9/11 Blueprint for Truth. Everybody should be taking pamphlets in there. There's lots of information on our website, including index cards and so forth, that people can talk to their representatives about, include in letters, phone calls, etc. Also, the mainstream media should be hounded about the 9/11 truth until they relent. There needs to be millions of people talking to the, yelling at, writing to the mainstream media. It's a ceiling that is not made out of glass. It's a harder material. It takes jackhammering.
So let's give that website once again and tell people to go there, contact us, and get involved.
Yes, please send the link, ae911truth.org, to every architect and every engineer that you can find. Simply say, please check this out. There's 600 architects and engineers demanding for a new investigation based on all this evidence that we have not seen.
That is available at ae911truth.org.
Richard Gage, interviewed by Dr. Kevin Barrett last month on his new show, Fair and Balanced, heard on noliesradio.org. Thanks to Alan Reese for providing these recordings. And thank you for listening to another episode of Unwelcome Guests. You can download an MP3 or podcast of this and all previous episodes of the show at unwelcomeguests.org. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie.